We begin week three. You got an early first pitch today. Get those lineups set. It's Monday, April 18th. Adam Azer, Scott White, Heath Cummings. Fellas, it is rare, sort of rare, for your week to come down to the final inning of the final game on Sunday Night Baseball. And that's what happened to me last night. I lost in the podcast league, the original podcast league, on a Kenley Jansen save.
Yeah, Scott had the rare 60-point Sunday comeback yesterday against me in that league.
You know why? You know who was largely responsible for that 60-point comeback?
Matt Moore.
I drafted Matt Moore in every league I could, including that one. And I am happy about it.
Yeah, you
had a good game.
Two in a row.
Two in a row for sure. Matt Moore with 10 strikeouts yesterday. Was that what it was?
Yes. 10 strikeouts and only one walk between the two starts.
Ooh, that's very nice. That was against the White Sox on Sunday. His previous start was also a gem, as Scott mentioned. I think that was against the Indians. Anyway, welcome to the show, everybody. If you want to email us, we have plenty of emails to read. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. If we have time, we'll talk a little DFS. Seven night games tonight, one very early game.
Awful slate. Just garbage.
Yeah, the pitchers are interesting. The hitters has got it tough. But if you want more advice, listen to the Daily Fantasy Live podcast hosted by Heath Cummings. If you want some baseball picks, if you like betting games, the Opening Line podcast is for you. And go to sportsline.com and sign up for Sportsline for just $10 a month. All right. So we'll do Most Added. We'll go through Matt Harvey. I think we have to talk about Harvey and Wainwright and Kluber and Bumgarner. They've been struggling. But who stood out to you this weekend other than Matt Moore? What are the big storylines that fantasy owners need to know about?
Well, I think maybe one of the biggest, because he still hasn't gotten widely added, is Kevin Jepsen getting a couple saves with the Twins finally winning some games. I think he got either two or three over the weekend.
Two.
Yeah. And look, I don't think anyone's thinking the Twins are as bad as they looked at the start. I think they're probably close to a 500 team when all said and done. So I think the save chances will be there for someone. And I think it's highly possible it could be Jepsen the rest of the way. I know Perkins' DL stint isn't supposed to last long, but he's had back neck issues dating back a couple years now. And Jepsen showed last year he could be a closer. He's done fine so far. He's one of the guys who I was genuinely excited to pick up because there weren't that many, to be perfectly honest, when I went through my waiver claims this weekend.
All right, so that's Kevin Jepsen. Now, let's look at another situation. I'm sure you're going to Oakland next, right?
Absolutely, Ryan Madsen.
Yeah, so who's a better add? And I will mention that April 30th is Sean Doolittle Garden Gnome Day at O.co. So
they got to keep giving him shots at least until then.
Well, they said they're gonna divvy him up, but I mean, all you have to do is watch, either look at the box scores or just see what's happening to Sean Doolittle. It's pretty obvious what's trending right now. But what do you guys think? Like Madsen, Jepsen, who's a better add?
Well, and that's what I was looking at, because I know Madsen's 43% owned, Jepsen's 35%, so basically their availableness. I was hoping one of them was more owned, because I think there's a lot of similarities here. Now, Doolittle's not on the DL. He's just not been very good. Mm-hmm. But the whole Glenn Perkins on the DL thing, that the Twins seem fairly optimistic that Perkins is going to be okay after that original 15-day stint. Like, I don't think they think this is a long-term thing. So both guys are probably going to be in similar situations on mediocre to bad teams. I think I might just ever so slightly go Madsen.
I think I agree with that assessment. I do think it's possible Jepsen. I mean, I think it's possible less that, you know, Perkins just won't come back than that he'll come back and continue to be ineffective.
But yeah, I don't have much confidence in Doolittle right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Madsen, I mean, even after Madsen got the last two saves, the Athletics were saying, you know, they're still going to play hot hand matchup, whatever.
There's only one hot hand right now, though.
Exactly. And I think this could be a situation where Madsen, just by continuing to be effective, kind of puts a stop to the whole thing. So I think, you know, long story short, if I need reliable saves right now, Jepsen would be my preferred choice, but playing the long game, I do think Madsen could be better.
And last thing, I dropped Sean Doolittle in our podcast league, you know, 12 teams, two relief pitcher spots, Sparps are used, C-Sheck was available, Madsen was available, whatever. But I did not drop Sean Doolittle in our rotisserie leagues where there are no available saves on the waiver wire. I think that'd be a little bit premature, maybe in a week, but until it's certain, you know, if you're in one of those leagues where you need saves, probably a little early to drop Ryan Madsen, or Sean Doolittle, excuse me. Wow, so it's a busy weekend. It's always tough to talk about weekend standouts and try to recap what's happened for three straight days. How was your birthday party, Heath? What did you do?
I didn't really have a birthday party. I went to Buffalo Wild Wings.
You love Buffalo Wild Wings.
I like Buffalo Wild Wings. They have good marketing. They sent me an email with free wings like 2 days before my birthday. And
ooh,
as soon as I got that email, I was craving their wings.
Let me give you a piece of advice, Heath.
Yeah?
You like those all-you-can-eat steak restaurants?
No.
You don't like them? They just come around and give you different types of meat?
Oh, no, I've heard about those, but I've never been to one.
Oh, they're very good. You know, once every 4 months or so. It's not like an every weekend thing. Cause
okay,
your
every
stuff.
4 months.
But yeah. You sign up, you go to Texas Day Brazil. I'm sure Chima does the same thing, but Texas Day Brazil, they give you a free birthday meal, I'm pretty sure, which is $50.
Okay.
So that's a good one. That's a real
like. Can I just go on my birthday and get the free meal, or am I going to go ahead of time?
I think you go ahead of time. You have to sign up and everything.
Okay. Okay.
But I'm glad you had a good time at Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah, and I got some new Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Stout, which was delicious as well. So
I'm sure, Scott. I'm sure that's great, right? We have no idea.
It was delicious.
Okay.
I'll take your word for it.
Other standouts in the baseball world, not the birthday world. What happened this weekend that made you go, what?
Tyler Chatwood going to Wrigley Field against one of the best lineups in baseball, striking out seven and not giving up any runs. That made me go, what?
Oh, two hits.
Now the problem, of course, is that he pitches for the Rockies, so I'm not sure you can really rush out and add him, but, it's somebody I'm going to watch in his next start.
Well, actually, I'm glad you brought him up because both Chad Bettis and Tyler Chatwood had good starts for the Rockies at the Cubs. And maybe it's just this. They're owned in very few leagues. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the daily league owner. If they're on the road, are you interested in Bettis or Chatwood? Yeah, it's tough to trust any starting pitcher at Coors, especially any Rockies starting pitcher. But Bettis or Chatwood on the road, are they actually good options?
I think if they're on the road in San Diego, then they are a good option. Maybe even a great option.
Well,
if
what about the Dodgers?
On the road against the Dodgers? Probably not, because the Dodgers kill right-handed pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the playing the home-away game with Rockies pitchers is that while maybe early on it works out okay, like Coors Field is just screws with these pitchers so much, they end up getting into bad habits mechanically, getting into bad habits pitch selection-wise, and just not being effective anywhere in the long run, at least, you know, the vast majority of them. So I don't know that I'm going to call Tyler Chatwood an exception this early, Chad Bettis an exception. I mean, we kind of saw it with Chad Bettis last year. He started out pretty effective, and then by the end of the season had numbers just like any other Rockies pitcher. So,
but he was still like his road numbers still ended up very good last year.
What were the road numbers?
I think he had a 3.50 ERA on the road or something. But you can confirm
and,
that for me.
You know, if just going off memory, I think that
3.35.
Okay.
Well, let me go ahead and look at the game log so I don't have to go off memory. I'm thinking the later road starts were not as good as the earlier road starts.
Well, it's only April. I mean, now's the time. If you're in a daily league and you see one of these Rockies pitchers and they're on the road, are you interested? Does it just depend on the matchup?
You know, Bettis actually had a strong September home or away. It was kind of the middle of the portion of the season where he struggled. But I guess all I'm saying is it's going to take a lot. Well, normally this time of year, one start from a pitcher who, you know, gives me reason for optimism, I might go ahead and make a claim for him. For a Rockies pitcher, it's going to take a lot more than that.
Yeah, if they go to San Diego, I'm definitely starting them.
Who did you guys add and drop over the weekend? I'm going to throw out a name. I know Scott added him. I added him. Brandon Moss. just desperate for power in some roto leagues, and Brandon Moss has four home runs. Scott, what are your thoughts on Cardinals first baseman Brandon Moss, who has four home runs? Two of them are pinch hit home runs.
Well, I think there's an opportunity for one of these left-handed hitters on the Cardinals, be it Hazel Baker, who has been the presumed favorite for a while based on his hot start, or Matt Adams, who's not very good, or Brandon Moss, who, you know, not too long ago we were thinking of as a kind of a lock for 30 home runs. And right now he's the hot hand. I don't have a lot of confidence in Hazel Baker's skills. I think he is going to be exposed here once he gets more bats, and the strikeouts are going to hold him back. So I think Moss probably, just based on his track record, has the best chance of claiming that semi-regular role. So yeah, if you need power, Roto League's probably the only format I'm going to make that move in right now, but obviously I picked him up.
Yeah, I think you dropped CJ Krohn for him.
Yeah, that was an easy call.
Yeah,
I was not very original because I was just looking at the most added list, and I think I added the most added player, and that was Matt Latos. But he is off to a really good start. He's got two starts this week. Listen, if you're in a league where you need to take advantage of two-start pitchers, I don't know why you wouldn't add him, unless you just have a rotation that's just stacked.
He terrifies me because he's so soft-tossing. Now, he's like Jared Weaver, you know? I just feel like he could give up eight runs in his next start.
I agree with you, and I passed him over in a couple leagues where I might have had room for another two-start pitcher. But this is a guy who we probably missed talking about on Friday's show because that was coming off, you know, a second straight really good start to begin the season. And the difference between that start and the first start was his average fastball velocity was up like 2 miles per hour. So it went from a scary 89 on average to, that's, you know, closer to normal Matt Latos, 91 and a half.
And he gets, I mean, the Angels as one start is a pretty good week. Because I don't think the Angels offense is very good. They've got two and a half good hitters in their lineup. and then the Rangers are struggling so bad right now. They score nine runs, but it seems like they've taken advantage of some bullpens, and they've had a couple of big games, but you look down up and down their roster and they've got hitters that are in all kinds of funks.
Yeah. All right.
CJ
well,
Brown.
I guess it's probably more worth a shot in points leagues. Latos is actually the fourth most added player, most added pitcher though. Hazel Baker and actually two Cardinals up on top of the list. Hazel Baker and shortstop Aledmys Diaz. It's kind of interesting that Ruben Tejada could be activated today, so we'll see what happens with Diaz. And Angel Pagan is the third most added player, and then you have Matt Latos and Genmar Gomez. Well, if Aledmys Diaz is the number two most added player, we should probably talk about him. You guys have any interest in Diaz? Now 43% owned.
I know Al said that he added him in Tout this weekend. Solely because he's trying to sell high on Trevor Story. And he's going to plug Diaz into Story's position.
I mean, the thing about Diaz, I need a shortstop in a couple leagues. And, you know, some of these guys like Eugenio Suarez have cooled off. So I don't know how much I can rely on him all season. Still leaning to him over Diaz for now. But I like to have a fallback option in case somebody like Suarez just falls off a cliff, you know?
Yeah, I worry about the playing time because Tejada's going to... Do you think Tejada will have a role? And, of course, Peralta will come back in a couple of months, and this will be a short-term thing.
Yeah,
anyway.
No, it's right to worry about the playing time. That why I set it up the way I did is because, you know, I'm not counting on Aledmys Diaz yet, but I think he's interesting enough to add as somebody who could end up being much more useful in shortstop than anybody was thinking coming in. I mean, part of my lack of enthusiasm over him is because the Cardinals had never really seemed excited about him. They gave him this money, and then they never really made it. It never seemed like a priority to get him on the big league roster, but he has 8 extra base hits and 32 at-bats, including 2 home runs. He's struck out twice in those 32 at-bats, and I never really saw him as a power hitter, but last year in the minors, he hit 13 home runs. That's not insignificant.
I wrote on Friday about middle infielders and how much longer before I dropped them. I'm curious, of the three shortstops I wrote about, if you'd rather have Diaz over all of them.
What are they? Who are they?
Ketel Marte, who's off to a dreadful start.
Yeah, he is. Probably lean Marte still.
Okay. Alcides Escobar?
Yeah, I'd rather have Diaz than him.
Who, actually, one of the things I wrote about Escobar was the Royals weren't running. I think Escobar stole two or three bases.
Yeah, Escobar had a good weekend.
He did have a good weekend.
Yeah, I'll amend that to say if it's a Roto League where I need steel specifically, I'd rather have Escobar.
And then Asdrubal Cabrera.
Yeah, I'd take a flyer on over Asdrubal right now. I didn't have that much confidence in Cabrera to begin with. I was just kind of hoping the second half would carry over, and it hasn't.
Last one. Can I throw one more name out? How about Nick Ahmed or Aledmys Diaz?
Definitely Diaz. I don't believe Ahmed has upside offensively.
Okay.
I don't think I would drop any of those three guys for Diaz that I mentioned. In a points league, I'd drop Escobar for Diaz, but Cabrera actually woke up too. I have this gift, Adam, where I write about struggling players and they have good weekends.
So that's just the reverse jinx. That's the podcast reverse jinx. That actually exists. That's been happening for a couple of years now.
Send me your requests for your struggling stars and I will write about how they suck and then they will be good again.
I was going to say Freddie Freeman, but I think he's coming out of his funk. He had an excellent weekend.
Yeah, I just thought about him and he started hitting me.
I'm just going to say two other guys I added, both in Roto. I think Derek Holland is one of the last pitchers that I see that's widely available that I could see being like over 50% owned soon. You know, I'm not like thrilled about it, but I'm taking a flyer. He's on my bench. Derek Holland and Avisel Garcia. He's walking, which is interesting to me. And I don't know. I'm not quite ready to give up on him yet. I know Al's kind of got burned by him last year and is annoyed with Garcia. But again, it was sort of the same philosophy as Brandon Moss. Like, I just need some pop in a Roto League, so I took a flyer on Garcia. But we'll keep him on my bench for a little while and see what happens.
Avisel Garcia.
I'm just
going to
call him Avi, by the way, because I have
Avi,
trouble.
Yes.
I have trouble pronouncing his name, and the broadcasters call him Avi.
It's interesting that you pick him up as a source of power, because, I mean, he hasn't shown any, except in spring training.
Yeah.
So, but kind of along the lines of your Derek Holland point, I think Chris Bassett is...
I was going to go with the other starting pitcher from that game.
Chris Medlin. I could see both of them, yeah, being pitchers who are popular waiver claims over the next two or three weeks, because I don't think either of them is going to be like a frontline start him every week strikeout per inning type, although Medlin has been that so far.
Right.
But I think they both are good enough to start and to keep around for the two start weeks. I think Medlin's biggest issue is just regaining his command after Tommy John surgery, because the velocity actually is as good as it was before that second.
He's
procedure.
Walking way too many batters early on.
Four in each of his last two starts.
But he's striking out enough to get away with it so far.
Now, I should amend what I said about Derek Holland. I thought he was more like 30% owned. He's now 44% owned, but maybe he'll be 70% owned at some point if he keeps this going. Okay, guys. We took a look at some of our most added players, others on the most added list. After Hazel Baker, Diaz, Pagan, Latos, and Genmar Gomez, it's Kevin Jepsen. Enrique Hernandez is up to 29% owned. That's, you know, Carl Crawford's coming back soon. I don't know what Enrique Hernandez's role will be for the Dodgers.
We were just talking about this morning. Can they please just play him every day? Play him at a different position every day. I don't care. He can play like six different positions. But I'd like to see what this guy would do playing every day.
Didn't he play every day for the Marlins? I thought he did, and he didn't do very well.
Yeah, but it was also his rookie season. I mean, I don't think we ever assume a player's at his best his first year in the league.
No, you're right.
I think there's legit pop here, and you know, wide versatility could become shortstop eligible again at some point if they were bouncing him around.
Enrique Hernandez is second base and outfield eligible right now.
Right. No, I think he's definitely an interesting player, but I'm not particularly motivated to add him because they haven't shown they are going to play him anywhere close to consistently.
If you need a catcher, is anybody buying what Jared Saltalamacchi is doing right now? He's the 10th most added player in our leagues.
I mean, you could do worse if you need a second catcher. I know I have Jason Castro in a couple Roto leagues and was at least thinking about it. I don't have a lot of confidence that this power surge for Saltalamacchi is him turning over a new leaf at 31 or whatever he is.
And would you rather have Saltalamacchia or Christian Vasquez?
Well, I'll take Saltalamacchia over Vasquez because Vasquez can't hit.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good answer. Now, I have been all over the SeatGeek app the last few days. I've been tracking ticket prices for last night's Panthers-Islanders game. And you know what? If I had just been a little bit more popular, I would have gone to the game, but I couldn't find anyone to go with me. But I could be sitting here giving you an actual testimonial saying, I've been using SeatGeek and I got my $20 rebate as a first-time user.
You would have been prom king if you were just a little more popular.
That's
too,
true.
Right? Isn't that the way the story goes?
I was nominated for prom king, but I did not win it. So
story of Adam's life. If you were just a little more popular.
But I do know a good app when I see it and a good website, and that would be SeatGeek. I love SeatGeek. You have to download the free SeatGeek app or just go to SeatGeek.com to look for tickets to concerts or to sporting events, and we can save you $20 too. So why SeatGeek? Well, first of all, they pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you're going to save time and never miss a deal. Tickets are ranked based on value. You can quickly find underpriced seats. And the price you see, I love this. The price you see, that's the price you pay at checkout. There are no huge fees at checkout, unlike StubHub. In fact, yesterday, I saw the prices on SeatGeek. I went on StubHub just to compare. A lot cheaper on SeatGeek. And that was even considering no fee at the end. Like, after, if you see the price on StubHub, there's a fee afterwards. On SeatGeek, there isn't. What you see is what you pay. So SeatGeek also has a detailed map. You can see the view from your seat. And this is why it's the only website or app I'm using from here on out to buy tickets going forward. If you want to save some money, here's what you do. Download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code and enter this code, all caps, FANTASY, F-A-N-T-A-S-Y, FANTASY. SeatGeek's going to send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Again, click on the settings tab, add a promo code, and it's FANTASY, $20 after you make your first ticket purchase on SeatGeek. All right, let's talk about these studs being duds. Four pitchers. Tell me who you're worried about. Matt Harvey, he's been terrible. Adam Wainwright, he's been worse. Corey Kluber. So if you watch the game on Sunday, he gave up three runs in the first and three runs in the second. In the second inning, Rajay Davis lost two fly balls in the sun. So, in my opinion, those should be errors.
I'll go ahead and say Corey Kluber is who I'm worried about least.
Well, I'm not willing to say that. Madison Bumgarner is the last one. I'd rather have Bumgarner than Kluber. But, fine.
Okay.
I could see Harvey and Wainwright being bigger concerns than Kluber.
Wainwright is by far, like, I'm not particularly worried about Harvey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm extremely frightened by Adam Wainwright. Just, and partially it's because I wasn't high on him coming into the year, so there's some confirmation bias there, I'm sure. But his peripherals are atrocious. He's walking more batters than he's striking out. You look at on Fangraph's soft contact leaderboard, there's one pitcher in all of baseball that's generated less soft contact than Adam Wainwright. That's John Lackey, 7.9%. Wainwright's at 9.8%. So he's striking nobody out. And everybody's hitting the ball hard, and he's walking people.
I was expecting a lower end pitcher than John Lackey when you were like, "Oh, only one is allowed less soft contact."
Right.
Allowing soft contact is a good thing. I mean,
you'd rather
any pitcher do that. Yeah,
you'd rather not walk more people than you strike out
for sure. No, I mean, it's clear Wainwright isn't right, and I think it's clear he's the most worrisome too. I mean, just because of age and the injury he's coming off of, and the fact he was the least bat missy of these four. I think all of those make him
bat-missy.
Clearly.
I like that.
I still think I'd be more likely to buy low on him than panic and sell low.
Ooh, really?
Yeah.
There's no universe in which I'm buying low on Adam Wainwright.
Yeah, I buy the explanation. It's mostly mechanical. And I buy the explanation for Harvey as well, which is also a mechanical issue, specifically from the stretch. And you saw that play out in this last start because he was, the first 4 2/3 innings, I think it was, were scoreless, and then he just fell apart once he started.
Yeah.
I don't even think it was just scoreless. Was it perfect?
It was like one hit or something. It was excellent. Let's just say that. I don't
know. So bad hitter started getting on base, and he started pitching from the stretch, and things just fell apart from there. The velocity wasn't great at that point, but, poor mechanics are going to showing velocity as well. His overall fastball velocity was still over 94, which isn't quite what we're used to from Harvey, but you know, it's still really hard. It makes him one of the hardest throwing starting pitchers in the majors. So I think he's going to get this figured out. I think he's a good buy low candidate as well. I think Bumgarner's a good buy low candidate because I know a lot of people are there. There's been the storyline about his foot. But hang on, let me find my numbers here on Bumgarner. Talk, Heath.
Well, okay, I'm going to go to Corey Kluber. You can come back to Madison Bumgarner because this game against the Mets, he walked one batter. He struck out eight in six innings. I mean, basically, he just got BABIP death.
And
I do think the one thing. Well, what do you mean, no?
I mean, I watched the game, and I'm telling you, this is what concerns me about Corey Kluber. He doesn't have an overpowering fastball right now. I don't know if that's going to come back, but you can see it on the Brooks baseball, or you can see it with your eyes. The guy's fastball is not even close to what it used to be, and that's why I'm a little concerned about Kluber.
I don't care what his fastball is if he can strike out eight batters in six innings.
I do. It reminds me of Verlander, and it reminds me of Lincecum, guys with great, well, Lincecum in particular, great breaking stuff, and not to this degree, not to Lincecum's degree, but great breaking stuff, still getting a lot of swings and misses, still getting a lot of strikeouts, but because he didn't have a good enough fastball, he gave up home runs, and he gave up too many.
He did not give up a home run in this game, though.
He didn't give up a home run in this game, but he gave up two or three in his previous game, right?
He's given up two home runs in 19 innings, which is not a high number.
Not bad. It's not bad.
I mean, he did, you can't just say no to he got bad.
But last year, Kluber gave up a lot of home runs.
Right. The bigger issue I have, and the one reason I think you could validly be concerned, is you talked about them losing two fly balls in the sun. The Indians' outfield defense is just atrocious. The only thing that scares me more than the Indians' outfield defense right now is the Athletics' infield defense between Danny Valencia, Marcus Semien, and whoever they're playing at second base. And those, that, like, I don't expect that to get better. That's going to be an issue for him.
What about when Brantley comes back?
I don't know that Brantley's a particularly good defender anymore.
I'm not sure. And Chisenhall will be back.
Well, that's not going to help. He's a third baseman they're playing in the outfield.
Yeah, I don't know what the metrics say.
You know, that worked out pretty well for Alex Gordon. Just want to throw that out there.
It did. I don't think Lonnie Chisenhall's Alex Gordon.
I think the most concerning part about Kluber is the velocity, as Adam was saying. But the average velocity is only down a mile per hour more than last year. I mean, there were some starts where he averaged closer to 95 early last year, and right now he's kind of been steadily 92.
Well, can I ask you this, Scott? What about compared to 2 years ago? Because I think 2 years ago he felt like a flamethrower to me with this unbelievable slider. And last year I thought he lost that great fastball. And I'm going to just be honest, this is sort of my own perception from having him on fantasy teams and watching him a lot. Just very interested in what was going on with Kluber. Why wasn't his ERA better? And this year I feel the same way. I think the fastball will get better. You know, it's only the third start in April. But I just don't think he's armed with that same dominating fastball.
It dropped about a mile per hour last year from 2 years ago. And I'm going to go as far as to say I don't think we'll see Kluber from 2 years ago. If I could amend my preseason Cy Young pick, I would already amend it. I mean, the 0-3 record doesn't help. But at the same time, I feel like we're kind of seeing history repeated from last year because last April, Corey Kluber also had two starts where he gave up double-digit hits, and that continued kind of through mid-May. And then, you know, by season's end, we were still pretty happy with all the numbers except the win-loss record and the ERA. I think just law of averages says the win-loss record's going to improve. That was a lot of bad luck. But, I mean, he was a good strikeout pitcher. He still had the low whip, the low walk rate. I think in the long run, it's going to turn around kind of like it did last year.
I just want to, real quick, on the fastball velocity, because I'm looking at Fangraphs and the average fastball velocity, 2012, 92.6. 2013, 92.9. 2014, 93.2. So there's 0.6 of a difference between those 3 years. Last year, 92.6. This year, so far, 91.2. So if it's 91.2 for the whole year, then yeah, maybe I'm a little concerned, but that's 2 miles an hour difference from 2 years ago and 1.4 from last year, and it could just be that it's April.
Yeah, it could be. And I'll say this about Kluber. You know, last year, if he just does as well as he did last year, the ERA might disappoint you, but he pitches so many innings and he'll get enough strikeouts that he's going to be really valuable in fantasy.
Yeah, yesterday was a perfect example. The fact that he gave up six runs in the first two innings and went six innings and got you eight strikeouts.
Yeah,
like you end up feeling better about that.
But it sounds like you would buy low on Kluber.
I've made three offers this morning.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm quite there yet. It depends how low, you know. Like, I would trade Velasquez for Kluber if anybody would be willing to do that.
I bet you would.
I think for some reason the storylines associated with Harvey and Bumgarner, and certainly Wainwright, make them easier to buy low than Kluber. I think, you know, most Kluber's, it's just really the numbers that would scare people away. So.
Okay, so starter sit, Matt Harvey at Atlanta this week.
Start.
Yep.
Adam Wainwright at San Diego.
Sit.
It depends on my roster, because as worried as I am about Adam Wainwright, it's San Diego.
Kluber at Detroit, Bumgarner against Arizona.
Start.
Okay. Yep.
All right, so it's been a while since we haven't talked about any news, so let's get to some news. Jose Reyes. All right, I'm going to pull up the email I sent to you fellas. Wasn't that nice of me, by the way?
It really was. Who exactly is it that wrote this response?
Okay.
What is their job?
Denver Post mailbag. I'm pulling up the article right now. This is Patrick Saunders of the Denver Post.
Patrick Saunders. So is he the beat writer?
He's a writer. I don't know exactly. Can you look that up?
He is the beat writer. I just looked it up.
Okay,
for the Denver Post.
Yes.
Rockies beat writer for the Denver Post speculates. He says, here's what I think could happen. Reyes will be suspended for 30 to 50 games and will subsequently lose money for each game he misses. I do not think the Rockies will be able to trade Reyes to another team because of his high salary and his current controversial situation. The Rockies will sit tight while Reyes serves his suspension, then they will release him, thus saving some of the money originally owed him, but still having to eat the remainder of his contract. In other words, I don't see Reyes playing for the Rockies again. This is only my prediction of what could happen. There could be legal ramifications of which I'm not aware. Plus, we really don't know what happened in that hotel room in Hawaii. This I know. Story is the starting shortstop for now and for the future. React.
That fits very well with Scott White's expectations. I have I don't think we have a lot of history of it, and I have a really hard time seeing a team like the Rockies just throwing away $30 million without at least giving Reyes a month to see if he plays well and then can get traded. But it's within the realm of possibility. I think Trevor Story's production will influence it as well.
Mm-hmm.
I sent out a tweet this morning. Trevor Story's first six games of this year, he went 333, 357, 11-11 with seven home runs and eight strikeouts. Basically the best hitter in the history of the universe. Mm-hmm. His last six games, 250, 296 on base, 458 slug, no home runs and 14 strikeouts.
I'm surprised the slug is that high, actually.
He had two triples in the same game.
Yeah.
You had two triples in a week, right, and you're going to have a good slug.
But those were almost home runs. They were off the higher wall
at
Coors Field. He's obviously struggling right now.
Well, just to be expected. You know, I don't think anybody expected him to sustain that pace. And,
no, but...
You know, if you compare... just about any hitter in the majors right now will have a good week or bad week, one the first being one and the second being the other.
If he has less than 300 on base and is striking out 33% of the time for the next month, which is well within the realm of possibility.
Oh, yeah, I expect him to strike out that much.
So if he does that over the next month and then Reyes comes back, I don't know why you don't give Reyes a chance to give himself some trade value, especially if they can get the narrative out there. At some point, we're going to hear what happened.
It would be such minimal trade value. Like, you're talking about some Class A reliever, probably, who you could maybe get for him and still eat a lot of his salary.
I just don't think it's worth it. I don't understand why. And we don't have details yet, so I'm not trying to seem insensitive. But we also don't have horrific details of what he did either. I think the details in this situation matter a lot as far as the narrative and his value.
It does matter to his value, but I'm just coming at this for the perspective. I don't like if this never happened, I don't think he'd have much trade value. Like he's obviously on the decline. He has a monster salary.
It depends on a lot on how much the Rockies would be willing to eat. But
well,
if they're
going to
eat all $30 million dropping.
I'm just going to speed this up here because instead of speculating, let me just ask you, is there any point in hanging on to Jose Reyes right now?
I still have him on a couple of rosters. I haven't dropped him yet.
It'd have to be a deep league for me. Certainly not a head-to-head league.
Okay. Minnesota again, hoping Glenn Perkins will be back after 15 days. Charlie Blackman says he will be ready after his 15-day DL stint is over. He has the turd toe, as I remember. Jacob DeGrom, I don't think you should start him this week because he might make a start over the weekend. The good news is that DeGrom's newborn baby is doing better, so he could be back this weekend, but I'd say it's a little up in the air. Do you guys agree?
Yep.
Okay. Now, as Scott was alluding to, Mets pitching coach Dan Worthen says Matt Harvey collapsing his back leg when he's pitching in the stretch and that he's pressing a little bit. So we could see a clear indicator, good out of the windup, bad out of the stretch in Saturday start. Travis d'Arnaud unlikely to play today due to a bruised elbow. Doesn't seem like a serious injury, but you know, people are asking in one catcher league, should I drop Travis d'Arnaud? What is your answer to that question?
Probably not.
No way.
Yeah. Starling Marte did not start Sunday. He was a defensive replacement, though. He was hit by a pitch on the hand on Saturday. So you keep an eye on that. I'd probably start him. He's stealing a lot of bases all over the place. All right, Lance McCullers had a minor setback. He did not pitch on Saturday in his rehab start. He had soreness, but McCullers was able to throw yesterday with no issue. So hopefully we'll get an update soon.
But he didn't pitch in a game, right? He just threw.
Yeah, I know. It's
I'm much more worried.
Well, it's better to miss a start and then throw the next day. It could be worse, I suppose.
He threw something like 50 pitches too. I don't think they would have let him do that if there was a real problem, you know.
All right, two guys who are starting today for the first time this season: Archie Bradley for Arizona and Dan Straley for Cincinnati. Do you have any interest in these two?
I mean, Archie Bradley is not that far removed from being one of the top two or three pitching prospects in baseball. Obviously, last year didn't go well for him, but there were a lot of injury issues. And I don't think he was having the walk problems in this spring or in the minors. That wasn't as big of an issue as it has been in the past. So I'm interested, not that I'm rushing out to pick him up, but if he has a good start, yeah.
Should we pick him up before he has the good start?
I think if you've got somebody in the bottom of your roster that's just kind of meh, it's not bad. I mean, pick him up, and then chances are whoever you're dropping, you can have him back on Wednesday if you want him.
By the way, he did walk 5 in 6 2/3 innings in his 2 minor league starts. So
he's still having walk problems.
Yeah.
He also struck out a lot.
Yeah. Maybe he has good stuff.
No, I would rather have Derek Holland or Archie Bradley.
I'd rather have Archie Bradley for today. Like, if I had Derek Holland on the bottom of my roster, I think he's worth dropping for a speculation on Bradley.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Okay. And Jung Ho Kang will begin a rehab assignment today. And Scott and Heath have been celebrating all weekend.
Yes.
Let's talk about some hitters. We talked Brandon Moss. He's 26% owned. Michael Saunders is 17% owned. He's not really having a very good season, but he led off for the Blue Jays on Sunday. By the way, the Blue Jays are not exactly the Blue Jays right now. They have 3 guys who can hit. Tulowitzki has been horrible in the 5-hole, and Kevin Pillar was so bad as a leadoff hitter that he's now batting 8th, and Russell Martin has been hitting. So it's not a terrible matchup, and they lead baseball in strikeouts. Right now, not the worst matchup in the world. But anyway, Michael Saunders, 17% own. Any interest in this man?
I don't have any interest in Michael Saunders, and I don't have any interest in thinking the Blue Jays aren't a terrible matchup, because this is one of those things where the first 2 weeks of the season are not changing my opinion on the Blue Jays offense.
No, okay, but it does make me like evaluate, oh, he did this against the Blue Jays. For example, Rick Porcello.
Okay.
Very, very good start against the Blue Jays until the 7th inning he gave up a 2-run homer to Encarnacion. Now, some people like Heath like Rick Porcello. I think he sucks. but honestly, like, a good start right now in the first 2 weeks against the Blue Jays, or the Mets for that matter, doesn't really mean what you thought it would mean.
Now, the Mets, I'm not surprised that they're bad offensively.
They're horrible offensively. They came out of it a little bit, but they've been horrible.
Mets are a bad offensive team?
I thought they were pretty average coming into the year, so that they're going to have bad stretches doesn't surprise me. David Wright's been much better than I expected. I didn't think he was very good.
Yeah, I like the Mets lineup. I don't see them as a bad offensive team. They were before they got Cespedes last year.
Well, I don't expect Cespedes to have the impact he had in the last 2 months of 2015.
He's off to a good start.
Yeah.
Granderson isn't, but we know he's a good player.
Conforto. I mean, like, why are people we're not talking about Conforto is having a good, good year.
Yes. He he's somebody we should. And we got scared early in the year, I think, because he sat against a couple lefties and he wasn't off to a very good start, but he's turned it around.
But he still might sit against lefties.
I guess you can. I don't know why you would decide he can't hit lefties when you pretty much know, except for a weird year, that Curtis Granderson can't hit lefties.
I think it's more just using it as an excuse to play Legarrison center sometimes, you know, because Cespedes isn't a center fielder.
No.
Hey, by the way, Carlos...
I think if one of them was a true center fielder, then it wouldn't even be an issue.
I'm gonna fly through the rest here. Carlos Gonzalez homered off a lefty. That was cool.
He's crushing.
Todd Frazier is struggling. Are you guys concerned about him? He's batting 178. He struck out four times yesterday. Todd Frazier.
Not yet.
Not really.
Okay. Travis Shaw, 52% own. He's hitting pretty well. 324 with a home run, 5 walks, 11 strikeouts, 4 doubles. Top 15 third baseman and first baseman right now. Travis Shaw. Encouraged? Do you care?
I bet he moved way up that top whatever list with his first home run yesterday. Like, just a sudden injection of 6 points can make a big difference where a player ranks this time of year.
Probably.
So, no, I think he needs more power at either of those positions to really measure up in fantasy.
Oh my gosh, would you believe Scott White added Melvin Upton Jr. in one of our roto leagues? Two home runs and 3 steals.
Well, he's a former Brave.
Now, if I say, because, you know, I was so excited about it when he was a Brave. Now, if you say, just because I got done saying something kind of negative about Travis Shaw in this particular league, a 30-man roster 12-team roto league, if Shaw was out there, I would have added him over Upton. But it being a roto league, Upton having 2 home runs and 3 steals already, and actually striking out in only like a quarter of his at-bats, it hasn't been embarrassing. Like, he's only 31. There's a chance they could have figured something out mechanically, and he's going to be something close to a 2020 player this year. I think there's definitely a non-zero chance of that.
We need to mark the tape, because I believe that was the first time in the history of baseball podcasts that somebody used "he's only 31 as a way to express possible upside.
31's not, it's not like he's reached the point of no return.
Raul Bañez did figure it out at 31.
No, we've seen Upton be good in the majors before. It's not like,
oh god, I'm not gonna even let Heath be an ageist.
I'm not even being an ageist in this instant. I'm just saying,
yo, you are though.
Like, this is not the, usually 31's not when guys figure it out.
It's not figuring it out, though. It's recapturing it.
Recapturing it. Okay.
Yes.
Well, Upton, yeah, I guess you could take a gamble on him in deeper roto leagues. Rajay Davis stole his 5th base on Saturday, and we got to keep an eye on Billy Hamilton. Actually, one of our emailers wanted to know if now's a good time to buy low on Billy Hamilton, super low on Hamilton, because he did not start Saturday or Sunday.
Yikes. I don't know. Like, he helps a lot on defense, but I might be really close to just using him in the Jerod Dyson role. And he comes in as a pinch runner in the 6th or 7th or 8th inning and plays center field the rest of the game.
Well, you can't use him that way. You're not a manager. No. You're a fantasy manager.
I'm sure that the Reds would like to know what I think they should do with Billy Hamilton.
It's not... I mean, he's going to have to steal some bases. The emailer wrote... I don't know if this is true, but I wouldn't be surprised that he's only been on first base with nobody on second base like twice this year.
That's awful.
Well, he's had some extra base hits, and I don't know. It's just weird.
Right. No, he's been really awful.
Yeah,
he sucks. We're going on 1,100 plate appearances where he's been really awful.
Yeah, Billy Hamilton's bad. All right, it's an interesting night for a FanDuel lineup. Only 7 games on the evening slate. You can put Noah Syndergaard in your lineup. Can you still have enough good hitters to cash? These are the types of awesome decisions you get to make on a daily basis. It's actually a very, very good challenge in FanDuel. So when you play on FanDuel, you're going to love it because you love fantasy baseball. I've played a bunch of daily fantasy on FanDuel. I've won a lot of money, and you can too. And I love when we hear from our listeners, hey, I won a few $100. I won a few $1,000 on FanDuel. It happens. You should start playing today because we have this special offer for new users. If you sign up today and you enter your first league, either you win a cash prize in that league or FanDuel will automatically refund your entry fee up to $10 for additional play. Here's how you do it. Go to FanDuel.com, click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, sign up with our promo code. It's Home Run. The promo code, again, is Home Run, no spaces, one word. And, yeah, that's a great offer. Either win a cash prize or you get a refund up to $10 on your entry fee for additional play. Just looking at what happened rest of the weekend. Man, a lot of stuff. So, Steven Matz, Kenta Maeda. Matz was amazing against Cleveland, rebounding from a horrible start against Miami. Maeda, three good ones, 2-0 with a .47 ERA. Any thoughts on either Matz or Kenta Maeda?
I think Matz is going to be pretty close to must start the rest of the way. Made an adjustment from his last start. Worthen started. Dan Worthen told him to throw his breaking balls more, and you see the result. Good curveball on this guy. I think he could be one of this season's bigger breakouts as starting pitcher. Maeda, I mean, I think he's going to be good. I think you're going to start him a lot of the time, but the lack of strikeout potential is going to keep him a step behind, like, the ace level starting pitchers.
Well, yeah, he's not going to be, but I think he's still going to be. I mean, unless you have a team full of studs, he's probably going to be must start about every week too. Like, I don't know.
Would you start a 2-start Ervin Santana over a 1-start Maeda? No, I probably would.
I would not.
Okay.
I understand that a lot of people do that. You have to remember there's a huge risk factor with something like an Ervin Santana too.
Would you rather have Masahiro Tanaka or Kenta Maeda?
Tanaka.
I would still rather have Tanaka.
Who had a good, nice bounce back start too, by the way, Adam.
This is the best he's looked, but he threw his fastball 11% of the time, and that's a season high.
Okay. Well, whatever.
That's a season high?
Yeah.
If Steven Matz doesn't need it, neither does Masahiro Tanaka.
I don't agree with that. It's 1%, 4%, 11% so far in his three starts. He's throwing 94 late in the game, so he had his good fastball yesterday. It was definitely the best start that Tanaka's had. Matt Moore was great. Jake Odorizzi's been really good, guys. 2.41 ERA, 3 walks, 20 strikeouts, and 18 and 2/3. He's faced Toronto, Baltimore on the road, and the White Sox. Odorizzi, are you bumping up your value on Odorizzi at all? Bump your rankings?
Not really. I still think he's going to have strikeout issues that'll make the ERA high. It's nice to see that the strikeout rate is higher to begin the year here, because 2 years ago it was pretty nice. Now the home run rate still hurt him with the ERA, but I think he could be like a top 40 pitcher as opposed to, you know, top 20.
Yeah.
I have so many things that I want to say about Juan Nicasio, but we don't have enough time, so I'm going to let you guys give your opinions on Juan Nicasio. 82% owned, 48% started last week, and 6 innings, 3 runs.
It was a fine start. I mean, barely quality with the earned runs, but the walks weren't the issue that they were in that second start. I think it was a good enough start that if you held on to him after that second start, you should continue to hold on to him.
He showed good Juan Nicasio in the first start, bad Juan Nicasio in the second start, and then he showed both, I think, in the third start, because he was pretty dominant at the start of that game and then just kind of lost it towards the end. If you're a Juan Nicasio believer, you have no reason to stop being a believer after this start.
What about Justin Verlander? Gives up 3 runs on 2 homers in the first inning and then 5 scoreless after that at Houston. 6 innings, 7 hits, 3 runs, 2 walks, 8 strikeouts. He's so annoying.
I feel like this is what we're going to see from Justin Verlander for a majority of the season. It was nice that the strikeouts are up, but that was against the Astros, who have some players that aren't afraid to whiff. Several of them, in fact.
This is why I was moving Vince Velasquez ahead of him on Friday, Adam, and you didn't like it.
I don't know if it was Verlander in particular that I didn't like. I just didn't like Velasquez in your top 30.
Oh, yeah. Well, Verlander's right there too.
All right, but I have enough questions. I have enough questions and concerns about Verlander that I would not trade Velasquez for Verlander. I don't think I'd trade anybody for Verlander unless it was like someone I just didn't care about.
I think I'd trade Wainwright maybe. No,
Maybe.
No, I won't.
It's close.
I would drop Adam Wainwright right now. I swear.
Oh, come on. I know you won it.
I have no faith in Adam Wainwright.
Well, you've been wrong before, Adam.
I have.
Just like that's the thing you got to remember when making moves, especially with high profile players like that. Like, nobody knows the future.
No, I'm not going to
pretending
drop him.
You do.
I'm not going to drop him, but I would trade him to Scott.
Okay.
Make Scott Adam Wainwright trade offers if you're in our leagues.
I don't have any.
You'll
Wainwright
probably make me bad ones now that I'll obviously decline.
I have no Adam Wainwright to trade you.
Maybe not. Maybe you'll surprise me.
How droppable are Brandon Finnegan and Rich Hill?
Finnegan, as a SPARP, not at all.
No.
In categories leagues, and Hill also points. I think either of them are... Yeah, it's perfectly fine to drop them if there's somebody you're looking to add. But at the same time, it's not like I have zero faith in them. Finnegan's actually been pretty good in terms of opponents' batting average, just walking way too many guys.
We're going to use the Archie Bradley test because I talked earlier about adding him and dropping Derek Holland because mm-hmm. I was excited just to see what Bradley did. I would not drop Finnegan just to see Bradley on my roster tonight.
Nope. Same issue.
But I would drop Hill to see Bradley tonight.
I wouldn't, but I'm higher on Hill to begin with. So.
Right.
All right, then. Blake Swihart was sent down. Texas signed Adrian Beltre to a 2-year, $36 million deal. Carl Crawford should be back soon. Trevor Plouffe left Sunday's game with an intercostal strain. There's no way I'm reading all these notes. There's just too much stuff. I'm going to pick and choose my favorites. Evan Gattis could be catching within the next 10 days.
I'm going to pick and choose my favorites. Evan Gattis.
Catching within the next 10 days. That's big.
When's he going to start hitting?
Well, when he becomes a catcher, you don't have
catching.
To care about
he doesn't that. Yeah, exactly. He doesn't have to do much of that.
He needs five appearances. Javier Baez, according to Joe Maddon, could start 2 to 3 times per week.
He started 2 of 3 this weekend.
Yeah, I know.
So that's a little ahead of pace.
Well,
I guess.
They're just getting him acclimated.
But I think that bolsters Jorge Soler's appeal. And Jorge Soler was not bad over the weekend. His percentage is starting to look a little better.
And Liriano's hamstring injury, not serious. Shelby Miller will make his start this week. Are you sitting Shelby Miller right now?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. He looks like garbage.
You're talking about dropping somebody. That's somebody you drop.
I don't want to go that far yet, but he's much closer than Wainwright.
And Homer Bailey is another guy I picked up. He should begin a rehab assignment this week.
Good DL stash. Under own DL stash.
Yeah. I've got him in 2 leagues, I think, and go drop Shelby Miller, pick up Homer Bailey, put him on the DL, and then pick up somebody else.
I think you're giving up on Shelby Miller a little bit too quickly here. So,
you're ready to drop Adam Wainwright.
No, I wouldn't drop Wainwright.
We talked him off the ledge.
I have no faith in Wainwright, but I wouldn't drop him.
I have no faith in Shelby Miller.
I mean, it's ugly. He scraped his pitching hand throwing a pitch like on the dirt.
Scraped it on the mound.
I mean, he's basically not, this isn't 100% true, but to a large extent, he's been good at Bush. He's been good at Turner, and he's not really been good anywhere else.
He needs to be good at the Bob. Does anybody call it the Bob anymore? It's not Bank One Ballpark. Chase Field.
That's not the same thing as Bush and Turner.
No,
it's not. Well, I mean, Turner's kind of neutral. But I mean, the thing about Shelby Miller is even last year, even throwing the win-loss record out, which was obviously influenced by being on a bad team, it wasn't that good of a year. The strikeout rate wasn't great. The innings, second half of the year, he had trouble going 6 innings again. The whip was kind of high. ERA was fine, I guess, but
it was good. I mean, 3.02 ERA.
It was good.
And 205 innings is good too.
Well, except it was mostly front loaded. He had issues pitching deep into games later in the year.
He's having issues right now.
Speeding it up. Here's my FanDuel lineup for tonight, Heath. You let me know what you think.
Okay.
Syndergaard.
Yeah, so you and everybody else.
Lucroy. Votto, who has amazing numbers against Jordan Lyles, who sucks against lefties, so makes sense. Joe Panik. Matt Duffy, as I like, I'm gonna go for the Giants against Archie Bradley. Gene Segura against Jake Peavy. I think a lot of runs in that game. Michael Conforto, I think great value, 2,700. He's 5 for 10 with a home run and 2 doubles against Jared Eichhoff. And then Oswaldo Arcia and Domingo Santana.
Yeah, I don't like everybody's going to play Syndergaard. So I don't think I would probably pay the $2,800 for LaCroix, especially since that game is the only game with weather concerns tonight. Now we'll know closer to game time whether it's actually going to happen or not. I do like Panic. I'll probably play Span as well at the top of that lineup. Because I see Span getting on base a couple times, maybe stealing a base or two. I don't mind Jacob Realmuto at catcher. He's only $2,400. Got some nice pop potential. I really think the Conforto and Votto plays are good, but the problem with playing really more than one good hit, great hitter and Syndergaard is you're going to end up with like three to four terrible hitters.
Yeah. Like Oswaldo Garcia.
Best thing to do is wait until the lineups come out and try to find a $2,400, $2,300, $2,200 hitter that's hitting at the top of the order. Maybe you'll go one for five.
All right, a couple other things. Phil Hughes, if you're not going with Fernandez or Syndergaard tonight, Hughes is placing Milwaukee. They have the fourth most strikeouts in baseball. Hughes hasn't been bad, and he's 6,900. It's hard to make a case for, like, which pitcher are you going with?
Well, I'm playing Thor, but in tournaments, I will probably have like 40% of Thor. And then I'll play two or three Jose Fernandez lineups because there's still, I mean, Noah Syndergaard is not Clayton Kershaw. He could have a bad start.
Against the Phillies?
Yeah, he could. He could have a bad start.
Yeah, he could.
And then the other one is Carlos Rodon is 8,500. You're saving about $3,000 off of Syndergaard, and he goes up against an Angels team that they're better against lefties, but I still don't think they're very good.
Fewest strikeouts in baseball for the Angels.
That's weird.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Interesting. Also, you should sit lefties against Hector Santiago and lefties against Phil Hughes. Phil Hughes is reverse splits, so I don't like Scooter Jeanette. And Yoenis Cespedes 0-for-9 against Jared Eichhoff, and he's the sixth most expensive outfielder.
Well, you can't play him. Might as well just bench him in your seasonal leagues, too.
Jason Hayward's 1-for-14 against Mike Leake. So, you know, just something to keep in mind. Emails. Let's go through these quickly. From Mike. He says, Dear Mookie, Darryl, and Gary, those are Mets. Overall rank for best points league ad for the next 4 to 5 weeks. Mark Reynolds, John Jaso, Mike Napoli, Jackie Bradley, Brandon Moss.
Jaso.
I might go Napoli ahead of him because of playing time concerns with Jaso. But yeah, he walks a lot.
Has Jaso been sitting recently?
No. Well, let me check.
I thought he'd played almost every day.
Yeah, I think he's everyday leadoff hitter with ridiculous hair. Ridiculous hair.
Well, they haven't faced a left-handed pitcher yet.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
By the way, Gregory Polanco leads the National League in walks. How about that? All right, Josh says, Dear Francisco L., Carlos C., and Marcus S., hit one starting pitcher and one shortstop, fits each name, and Scott has mixed them up multiple times on the show.
Yeah. Carlos Correa, Carlos Carrasco.
Francisco Lindor, Francisco Liriano, and Marcus Semien and Marcus Stroman. All right, Nomar Mazara has been pretty good. Is he worth rostering in a 10-team redraft league over Gerardo Parra, Alex Gordon, and Curtis Granderson? Would you rather have Mazara over those three? Parra,
yes.
Gordon, Granderson.
Yes, I think Gordon is the most expendable. But yeah, Mazara has 3 strikeouts and 27 at bats to begin his career. That is amazing.
Yeah, and the main reason why, like, if I had to wager something very important on is Nomar Mazara gonna be better than all three of those guys for the rest of the season, I don't know that I would say yes. But he certainly has more upside in a 10-team league that matters because you can always go find Curtis Granderson or Alex Gordon on the waiver wire.
From Martin, what is fair trade value for Corey Kluber now? I offered him straight up for Syndergaard, and I got shot down. Does Greinke have
Understand.
A better shot?
Greinke have a better shot?
At turning it around.
I'd rather have Kluber than Greinke.
Yes.
And I've still got Kluber ahead of Syndergaard. I offered a deal Jose Fernandez, and there's a couple other parts, but Jose and Kluber were the two main pieces. I'd rather have Kluber than Jose as well.
You have total faith in Corey Kluber.
Yeah, I just don't see anything that's happened so far to scare me other than the fact that the Indians are still terrible defensively in the outfield.
Okay. From Phil, grade the trade, 12-team head-to-head points league. Note, SPARP eligibility is irrelevant. I give Matt Latos and Vince Velasquez. I get Chris Archer and Jimmy Nelson.
Hmm.
I mean, Nelson and Latos are, you know, let's just get rid of them because they're not, they are fringy as it gets in that format. So it's just Archer for Velasquez, and obviously I'm taking Archer.
A minus.
Yeah, good job. From Isaac Acosta, I need a fill-in third baseman until Jungho Gong gets back. Castellanos, Tomas, Eduardo Nunez, or Jake Lamb?
Oh, man. I really, and I don't do this very often, but I'd probably just look at the matchups each week, and because I think that there's a lot of similarity between specifically Tomas and Castellanos. I had to choose between starting Lamb or Castellanos at corner infielder in one of our roto leagues, and I chose Tomas this week just because the Diamondbacks play three lefties.
Yep. I mean, Tomas had the two homers Sunday, so he appears to be the hotter hand, if that's counts for anything.
It counts for Scott.
Yeah, it does.
This week, I'd probably go Tomas or Castellanos. Would be my two choices.
Plus, I just wanted to mention Tomas had two home runs Sunday.
He did. Yeah, he did.
It's a big
worth
deal.
Mentioning. Yeah.
We had a lot of multi-homer games over the weekend, actually. One more email.
Suddenly, Tomas's OPS is over 900. Two-homer game this time of year will do that for you.
Christian from Toronto. I drafted Xander Bogaerts expecting a big power breakout, but what's going on? Is Bogaerts still considered a top three shortstop? Not sure he was, but where do you... Oh, yeah, he was, right?
He was borderline top three. It was right. Lindor or Bogaerts.
What would you put Bogaerts over under for home runs rest of season? I got the line at 8.5.
I wrote about this in the preseason that you could not really, in my opinion, expect Bogaerts to continue to have a huge BABIP and great average and have a power breakout both. I thought it was supposed to be, it should be one or the other. Unfortunately, so far it's been neither because he's got a terrible BABIP, a terrible batting average, and only one home run. I would put the over under at 9.5.
It's pretty low over under.
Yeah.
I
assume he's off to a slow start.
Mm-hmm.
I think if it lasts much longer, I probably, if I'm him, I go back to what worked last year. I'd rather have a 320 hitter with seven home runs than a 230 with 12.
You're right, but I don't know how conscious any of this is, you know? I'm going to decide to be this instead of this.
You don't think, he kind of said in the preseason that he sold out for lowering his strikeouts and getting on base last year, and he wanted to add more power this year.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you can add the power without losing something from last year.
Sure. But the thing is, law of averages, he's probably going to lose something last year either. So I don't think that's a sustainable formula for him. And I think he has more power potential. He's still so young. I mean, if he hits a dozen home runs, I don't even know that I'd call that a power breakthrough. So I'll take the over on 9.5 pretty easily.
That's it for today's show. Thank you, everybody. We're back tomorrow with another edition of Fantasy Baseball Today. For Scott White and Heath Cummings, I'm Adam Azer. We'll see you later.